You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Gail Spain. We're talking about your show at Nancy Margolis Gallery. Gail, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, Brainerd. Thank you for inviting me.
Gail, I'm really excited to talk about these beautiful paintings, and we'll talk about some individual ones and in your approach. But I was intrigued by the artist you studied under, Joris Ubans, if I'm saying that correctly, who said the grid is meditation. And yeah, I thought that was very powerful and interesting, and perhaps applied to much of your work, or not. Can you tell me a little bit about the influence of that particular teacher you were studying under, and that phrase, the grid is a meditation?
Sure. So I went to undergrad in the mid-70s, and teachers were more philosophers than they were formal instructions. Instructors, my teachers were more philosophical. And Joris, and I also wasn't a great student, but that phrase, the grid is a meditation, remained with me because I didn't understand it. I didn't understand minimalism as many undergraduates don't. I didn't really understand that moment in time, you know, the end of modernism, sort of that the strategy of what you see is what you see. And so it stuck with me. And I think fast forward to now in the work in the Nancy Margolis show, there is something about the grid that is a stable force. It's also an infinite, an idea of infinity. And so somewhere in between those ideas, I'm a representational painter, so obviously you can't see the grid, but the grid is there for me always, nonetheless, in regards to stability and infinity. And also in the intimacy with process, a lot of the work that I do is repetitive, as is the grid. And so there's a particular kind of intimacy, oddly enough, that some would say, that the grid offers in terms of intimacy with the two-dimensional plane, but also the act of touching and the act of repeating a pattern. And I guess I'll say one more thing about that. I taught for a long time, and when you teach 2D design, you try to make a student aware of the structure of the plane, the two-dimensional plane, or in three dimensions, the cube. And so that sort of, I also love the formal stuff like that. So I like messing with the grid if you're able. I'm not sure you really can, but in terms of symmetry and asymmetry, so I think about it in a formal way also.
Yeah, that's so interesting in how that enters into this work that often is sometimes seems like a grid, but often not. To talk about some paintings specifically, like Pearl with Boots and Pheasants, and you know, not just the narrative here, which is kind of fascinating, or to me it is, but also to speak about this formally first, the grid. There's what appear to be two windows in here. There isn't what seems to be a grid, although I could imagine it starting with a grid. Let's talk about this, yeah, in terms of how these are planned or began, and then we'll talk about the content in here as well. But is there a grid happening here as well that this was built on?
Sure. So the geometric abstraction of it all interests me. So the picture is divided into not really symmetrical thirds, you know, of that doorway or that window, however you see it. The floor is a particular measurement. The stone walkway outside is a particular measurement in relation to the bands in the sky or how the tree enters into the window. So in that regard, the grid is always present, or the idea of measurement, and in relation to symmetry or asymmetry. So yeah, I think the grid is present here, for sure.
And does it begin with that? Earlier you said something about it beginning with a grid and planning out a painting like this. Is that how the composition is in part arrived at?
Yeah, when I start a painting, I always am interested in the geometry of the picture plane. And so how I divide the picture plane up is my entry point. And it's a place, the divisions, the geometrical divisions, are places where something can happen. So as soon as you start to divide the picture plane, it's like throwing a pebble in a, you know, body of water, something ripples. And so as soon as I start to do that, whether it's a horizon line or an interior architectural kind of space, as soon as I start to do that, the painting itself makes itself known in a way. So yeah, geometry is really... Actually, I would be an abstract painter, except I like iconography. So it's all an abstraction, and so I embrace that through the geometry.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And the grid, the way I relate to that is I remember it was very influential for me. A film teacher actually talking about the rule of thirds. When I was in college for studying film, and that was the grid that's often on a camera, 35 millimeter camera then, but that can be in a camera, and that action always takes place, or one idea for that, you know, in cinema was that things should happen in thirds, right? If you're dividing up a canvas into three spaces, that should be a compositional element to get things I guess, you know, out of being centered, out of being, too close to the edge. But that was a kind of consistent rule, this sort of rule of thirds, which I think is a common rule in photography anyway. But the way you're talking about the grid is a little looser, I think. I mean, you know, there's almost a sense of an infinite dive in there, right? I mean, specifically, you know, we're talking about the painting Pearl with Boots and Pheasants. There's so much going on in there. Does that idea, rule of thirds, enter into that kind of thinking, compositional thinking, in terms of where things are placed in the picture frame?
Not that specifically. I do think... Well, I want to come to some kind of understanding of a painting's underlying structure. Like, that's really what I'm interested in. Certainly the subject matter is there, and I am interested in that and sort of communicating my experience through some kind of subject matter. But the game and the fun and the research and the, you know, the project for me is to come to some kind of understanding of, you know, what a painting is, and that involves the underlying structure. And I think of it, I do think of it in terms of infinity. I do think of a painting as a fragment taken out of life. And so when you ask about the rule of thirds, sometimes I think, like in the painting Turquoise Window, I framed that in so it looked less like a fragment. I think maybe more about the edges. Well, I think more about the edges of the picture than maybe I do, well, that's not really true, when I put a horizon line in, I'm very specific about where it's located and how that gives you a particular kind of perspective. So I guess in terms of the rule of thirds, while I don't think of it specifically like that, maybe I think of it in terms of what the spatial perspective is going to be, how it relates to a fragment taken out of real life, you know, the painting as a fragment out of real life, also the space within the painting and how the geometry creates the depth or the flatness.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. So maybe before we talk about Pearl with Boots and Pheasants in terms of content, let's talk about Turquoise Window, since you mentioned that in terms of horizon and more. This work feels, you know, this is, I mean, clearly a landscape. It's out of a window. Is this lighthouse is sometimes a recurring theme in here. Can you tell me a little bit about this one? This is, just in terms of the story here, if there is one, this is your home, your studio, your view, what you're looking at in terms of your view out your window. Is that correct?
Well, kind of. It'd be nice if it was that view out my window, honestly. I mean, I have had that particular, not that particular view, but I have had that. I lived on a small houseboat in Sausalito, and so I have had that relationship to the water where you see the water out of the window like that. But my home is not on the water. I'm a block from the beach here in South Portland, Maine, and that lighthouse is down the street, and I do see it on a daily basis when I walk the dog. That is not, maybe I could say that all of my work is actually a desire of wanting to be in relationship with water like that, because I, you know, my pocketbook is not that big. But in terms of that window, that painting, Turquoise Window, I think of paintings as places, and I want the viewer to also have that same experience. So when a viewer would say, I want to go there, I feel like I've succeeded in some way in making them aware of the painting as an object that one enters. In this particular painting, I was kind of emphasizing the relation. Well, it's a cottage. So cottages are very prominent in my work. I've lived in many cottages. There's a particular place here in Casco Bay that we summer in regularly. There's a relationship between nature and the interior that is always important to me. Being aware of the fragility of a wall in many ways, is up in much of my work. And so, you know, that painting is a window, and a painting is a window. As we know, the Renaissance picture window, a painting is a place that one enters. And in this particular piece, you enter where the table is, and then you exit out the window. And then you go back even further to another lighthouse. So the expanse, the vast expanse, is something that possibly might cause somebody to contemplate or gaze out or have a moment of repose, or when one thinks of hanging that on a wall, you've increased the psychological and physical space of wherever it's, of someone's home or wherever it's hanging. And in terms of the lighthouse, I'm not that interested in metaphor, although I know a lighthouse is a very potent symbol. It's not my intention to be metaphoric, but it's more about the lighthouse as an icon in my surroundings. And also, but I don't choose every element in my surroundings. I choose specific ones. And in this case, I was interested in it for a bunch of formal reasons, like I could paint the bricks over and over and over again I could create light beams that would then affect the geometry of the picture plane. I could make light come through the window and land on the edge of the table or the chair to also have that kind of crossover of a plane of light coming through a space. So some of that is a formal decision as well.
And there's so many fascinating things happening in this particular painting, and you know, the way the patterns are covering different areas, you know, in particular the ocean that kind of you know, really unusual way of filling it with these squares of color, where when you squint they almost come together and you can see the different colors of the water, just beautiful. But all over the table, the vase, the chair, the back, there's something happening in the lower part of the picture plane on the table. It looks almost like it could be a fold in the tablecloth or the shadow of a body. It's around the vase of the flowers that looks like something else is happening. It's a very organic form, but it looks like the curve of a body or hips. Is that part of the tablecloth or something else happening there? There's just curves that are coming from that below those flowers that are fascinating and draw my attention.
No, thanks for saying that. I didn't really see it that way. they're my attempt. They're my attempt at painting folds.
Right, that's what I thought. Folds in the cloth, yeah, of the table. And are these meant like from different distances? Like I was saying before, when I squint, that ocean through the window, you know, it's just beautiful. Those colors. It looks like it's both shimmering as the ocean can do, and also the sense of different colors from different depths in the ocean. So I would imagine that at different distances from this painting, it would have a different effect, right? Or is that not how you're thinking about it?
Well, how to paint light on water has always been a question for me, or how to paint water. In my work over time, I try a variety of things. This particular, these water squares, is a relatively new sort of way of making water. It satisfies a couple of different things for me. One is the action of repetition, which I think creates sort of an intimacy, not only with myself and the piece, but a sense of intimacy with a viewer, like that the viewer knows I did that. So it operates in terms of the question, how do I paint water? How do I paint light on water? And then also, when you say, does it operate at a distance and close up? My hope is that somebody will really look at these paintings for a long time. And so embedding a repeated pattern throughout the work, I like doing that. You know, I wouldn't do it if I didn't like it, but I think it also helps with that sense of having somebody look. A painting is a perceptual experience. And so the more that I can cause a viewer to experience that, and myself, the more successful I think the piece is. So, and then I guess the other thing is it's really the grid, right? So if you get really close up to it, it's the interrupted grid.
Right, yeah, I like that. And to get back to Pearl with Boots and Pheasants, this is you know, a very different feeling in many ways. This is, I imagine, Pearl is the name of the dog, perhaps your dog, but the pheasants running in the boots, you know, it feels like there's a story here, an invented story that's different than the others, or that's the way I'm reading it anyway, you know, the idea of these pheasants running along and the dog so quiet and the boots seemingly waiting as the picture is. Is there a narrative here or a story, or am I just reaching and thinking like that?
Well, no, you're right about it being a little bit different than the other pieces. I'm not a figurative painter, and so, although we could talk about that for a whole other episode, the dog has featured in my work since grad school, on and off. I've had dogs on and off. Pearl with Boots and Pheasants happened because I was recently at a residency in Wyoming at the UCross Foundation. And what captivated me there were the pheasants. When I came back, I wanted to find a place for them to show up. They didn't, you know, it's hard to, what happened there in that location, in that geography, really came into my psyche a lot. Place and the geography that surrounds me really affects what I paint. And so it was a way for me to merge my home where I am here in Maine with what had just happened in Wyoming. Those pheasants were sort of visitations in the paintings. And I've done a couple of more with the pheasants, but that's it. It's over. And so it was Pearl with Boots and Pheasants was a way for me to bridge those two worlds. And then the shoes or the boots are another recent iconography that I'm not that sure of yet. They have shoes, you know, certainly have a relationship to painting Philip Guston or Van Gogh's shoes. They also have a relationship to my own life. They're also an identity, sort of a way for me to put my identity in the work in a maybe more obvious and vulnerable way. This is an anomaly. This painting is kind of an anomaly in the body of work, so you're right about that. I hope I answered that question.
You did. I want to talk about one more called The Season Called Locking, also a very unusual painting in this series, but I'm also so curious about it. This is a beautiful painting that has the feeling of a season, fall, but I don't know what the season is that's called locking, so I'm curious. Yeah, can you tell me about this one? I don't know what locking is.
Well, I'm blanking on the person that said it right now. Locking is the season in between seasons. So, I'm forgetting who said this. So the
Kurt
person
Vonnegut.
Who
Kurt
said
Vonnegut
it.
Said it.
Kurt Vonnegut said it, and somebody else said it also. But yeah, Kurt Vonnegut said it. You know, you have spring and summer, and then you have fall, and then you have sort of the interiority, the locking that comes with the beginning of winter, and then you have the unlocking, which comes with the end of winter, and then you have spring. And so it's an additional season, and I experienced that I love that interiority, and so that's what fall is for me. The seasons impact my color and my subject matter greatly. And for the last couple of years, there has been a fall painting every year. And you know what is, it's May now or June, July. We're almost in July, and this show is up in July. So it takes, you know, fall shows up in July. So oftentimes, right now in my studio, there's a lot of green, like a ton of green, and very much about this particular time of year. So the seasons impact me, my geographic location. What's happening outside my window is what comes out on the canvas.
I like that. Yeah, it has just a beautiful sound to it also. I want to ask you one more question before we go, and of course for listeners, there's links here so that they can see more images and the whole show. What are you reading at the moment?
Well, like I mentioned, I recently stopped, I recently stopped teaching. I've been teaching for 30 years at the Maine College of Art and Design. And it's been a few years, and I feel like I've entered into sort of this new land of being a full-time studio artist. So what I'm reading, you know, even though I've been painting for 40 years, what I'm reading, I'm going to call them, they're sort of like self-help books for full-time artists. And it includes Rick Rubin's book, The Creative Act, A Way of Being, which I tend to revisit that periodically because I'm really in Rick Rubin's camp about the creative process. Krista Tippett's book, which is less of it's more of a reminder about how to make the world a better place. And I think painting or artists, us as artists, make the world a better place. Krista Tippett writes a book called An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living. I'm reading Helen Molesworth. I revisit, reread, look at many of the essays Helen Molesworth writes in her book, Open Questions. And then I just read Get the Picture by Bianca Bosker and Somehow, which is Anne Lamott's thoughts on love. So I think of them kind of as like helpers for my studio practice.
Yeah, that's a great list. That makes me smile. Those all sound wonderful. Gail, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I wish you well with this this gorgeous group of paintings.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.